Hello, and welcome to another episode of my show From My Dear Parnassus. I'm your host, Atman Vakil, and you are listening on midwaveradio.com. Well, I hope you folks are doing fine. It's been a rough couple of weeks for anyone on campus with the stay-at-home order being extended because of the surge in cases on campus. Hopefully, we'll see the last of it by the end of this week, by the middle point of this week. What do I mean by the end of this week? I'm sorry. But yeah, let's get back to the point here, which is today's episode. Today is part 3 of our series on the madrigal, and we are going to talk about the changes going on right at the end of the 16th century. So we are talking late 1580s, 1590s here, and the four composers we are going to feature today are Orlando di Lasso, or his Latinized name Orlando de Lassus, Luca Marenzio, Luzzasco Luzzaschi. Yeah, that's his actual name. It's Luzzasco Luzzaschi. I know. And the fourth, Carlo Gesualdo, the Prince of Venosa. But before we go into that very, very, very colorful neck of the woods, let's just have a brief recap on what we have discussed so far in our first two episodes on madrigals. We said that madrigals are secular vocal compositions from the Renaissance and Baroque periods. They are usually unaccompanied, though that changed later on, as we are going to see today, in fact. They generally had 3 to 6 voices. At times, 1 or 2, but that was rare. They originated in Italy, traveled all across Europe, very prominent in England. We'll probably do an episode on English madrigals at some point. And they are through composed and not strophic. That is, that the emphasis is on each line. You don't have different verses being repeated with the same music. Each stanza of poetry is set to... It's practically not really distinguished by stanza at all. You just see this nice flow of music throughout. That's what the madrigal is. And back in the first episode in this series, 2 weeks ago, we talked about the very first madrigalists. People like Philippe Verdelot and Jacques Arquedelt, who were deeply influenced by secular forms of music in their native Franco-Flemish regions. We talked quite a lot about this. Composers really being born and raised and taught their arts in the region, which is now France, Belgium, the Netherlands, roughly that patch. And then coming to work down in Italy, where they incorporated the sacred polyphony, which was so prominent at that point, into secular forms, giving rise to the madrigal, essentially. Going on, we also talked about how these early madrigals are a bit homophonic, that is, one main melody sort of guiding all the other voices in the same rhythm, more or less, most of the time, because they're really born out of those French and Belgian folk songs and chansons, as they were called, which were quite homophonic in nature. We even listened to one of them. We also saw early examples of word painting. Now, if you don't remember what that is really trying to express words of text quite literally, describe them through musical tools and textures, either individual words or larger meanings of phrases. Then last week we talked about the mid-16th century with composers like Adrian Willaert, whose madrigals were much more polyphonic in nature, and Cipriano de Rore, who pioneered the use of dissonance and expression to a much higher extent in madrigals. We also talked about one of the greatest composers of the time, probably the most eminent in terms of his legacy, Giovanni Pierluigi da Palestrina, who though primarily was a sacred music composer, we have more than 100 masses and motets by him, He also wrote madrigals, and his fame and legacy have endured, like we talked about last time. And now we move to this very magical period, which is right at the end of the 16th century. So, the generation after Cipriano de Rode. And we see so many interesting things going on around this period. It's just fascinating. Composers have really taken to what they've been taught by the generation above them, the generation of Cipriano, and they are trying to really push boundaries, go as far as they can go, try out new, different, magical things in their arts. And this is just resulting in more expression, the music being much more expressive, really conveying the meaning of the text, describing it beautifully. You see more chromaticism, that is, well, it derives from chroma, meaning color, and color is added to music in this sense by really going from note to note to note. So, da 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 da. So, if you were to imagine a keyboard going from a white key to the black, to the next white, to the next black, to the white, black, black, so on, so forth. You really see a lot of that weird key changes, modulations, which would have scandalized someone like Philip Verdelot, for instance. You see all of that going on right now, and we're going to talk quite a lot about it. Let's go to our first composer for the day, Orlando de Lassus, or his Italian name, Orlando di Lasso, lived from 1530 to around 1592. Again, one of the members of the Franco-Flemish school of composers, that batch of composers who were born and raised in the Netherlands, Belgium, France. That's where they learned their art, before he eventually moved to Italy, where he was very, very active, and settled down in Munich, Germany, after a long time, where he was very well respected. He was honored by dukes, kings, and even the Pope really honored him. I think the king of Bavaria, I don't remember which king, but there was a king who raised him to the nobility, and for a composer, that's, oh wow, you're not really going to do much better than that. That was something. Yeah, and there's all these letters by him which indicate what he really wanted to do was to have the flexibility and the musical freedom which the court at Munich allowed him. He got many job offers, though he turned them all down, even though they paid better, because they wouldn't have given him nearly as much as the flexibility at Munich, where he could basically write for the choir in whichever way he wanted, and he could really experiment with his art. Orlando de Lasso was also a very renowned teacher. A lot of composers flocked to Munich to learn from him. Well, he was very, very prominent in sacred music, much like Palestrina. His motets and masses are really beautiful. He managed to incorporate word painting and madrigalism and all those expressive chromaticism techniques, even in his sacred works, though that's not going to be our focus for today. He composed many secular forms as well. He wrote in so many different styles. He wrote the madrigal, he wrote many chansons, he wrote the German Lieder, something which Schubert and Beethoven would become really famous for, Schumann, those guys later on in the classical romantic periods, etc. One interesting feature of his name is this very literal use of word painting, in which he signs off his works with the solfege notes La and Sol. So, you know, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. So, he would end pieces with one of the four or five voices going from La to Sol. So if we are in, just going to pick a random key, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, Re, Re, Ra, 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 Ra. So if we are in that key, one of the voices would cadence like La sol. So the text would be different. I'm going to sing an amen to it just because I can't think of another word right now, but it would sound like amen. Something like that. But essentially, signing his own name in the music, because the notes La and Sol form his last name, Orlando di Lasso. very, very creative of him, very quirky of him to do that. Another nice feature of his music that his madrigals are often found in collections or groupings, as in his, for instance, his fourth book of madrigals, there's this one set of six madrigals, then another set of a cycle of madrigals which sort of form a nice, what I mean to say that it would be a large poetry broken down into different madrigals, or something like a collection of different poems meant to be played in order, performed in order. Such is the piece from an extract from which we are going to listen to right now. We are going to listen to parts of his Lagrime di San Pietro, Tears of St. Peter, which is a madrigal, but it is about a sacred theme, St. Peter, the apostle, the chief apostle of Christ. Let's just listen to Orlando di Lasso, the first two parts of his Lagrime di San Pietro. Here we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, so there we have it. Some really beautiful music by Orlando Di Lasso. In that last piece we heard, the second part of his Lacrime di San Pietro, you could really make out that nice Lasso. I sang that wrong, didn't I? La sol ending, which really spells out his name in the music using solfege syllables. Yeah, really clever back there. Another really fun fact about Orlando Di Lasso is that his music really crossed the channel and reached England as well, because there's this scene from Shakespeare, his play Henry IV, Part 2, in which there's this drinking song, which is actually a chanson, a small little song by Orlando Di Lasso. That same music, but using English lyrics instead of the original. Original French it was, I think. Yeah. really a cosmopolitan composer, Orlando Di Lasso. And now we move on to our next composer, Luca Marenzio, living from 1553 to 99, an Italian guy this time, not from Belgium or the Netherlands. His music is just so chromatic. It really brings in those depths of emotion with those sharp, contrasting, chromatic notes. Really create powerful dissonances, even though if not used simultaneously, then going from one voice to the next, especially when you consider different voices together, there's this thing called cross relations, in which dissonances are formed when when two voices move to notes which would have been dissonant with the previous note of the previous voice. let's not really get into technicalities here. Just you need to know his music is very chromatic. And his output was staggering. He wrote 17 books of madrigals within 9 years. Now, that is quite something. His one book of madrigal is like one album. So imagine releasing 17 albums of little choral poetry set to polyphonic music in the most beautiful chromatic way just within 9 years. You'd go, that's a tremendous piece. The piece of his we're going to listen to is called O Voi che Sospirate a Miglior Note, O You Who Sigh for Easier Notes or Nights. Now, there's a really little fun pun over there. Now again, this is a poem by the great Italian poet Francesco Petrarca. Petrarca's original poem has the word miglior notti, million nights. But here we have the text modified by the composer to read O voi che sospirate a miglior notte, to indicate a million notes, because we are using so many different notes, especially in such a nice chromatic manner. A really nice use of word painting there. This really alludes to the chromaticism which is going to be so prevalent in later sections of the piece. Let me read out the entire translation for you. O you who sigh for easier notes or nights, depends how we want to interpret the pun, who hear of love or speak of him in rhyme, pray he'll no longer be deaf to me, sweet death, refuge from misery and end of weeping, that he'll change for once his ancient style that makes men sad and could make me happy. Beautiful. Really beautiful. Petrarch's poetry really hitting you deep there. Just notice the harsh dissonances and chromaticism throughout, but especially in the line, muti una volta quel suo antico stile, that he'll change for once his ancient style. There, you have this really magical effect of a series of key changes which were very, very, very unorthodox at the time, very unusual to see things like that at the time. And what are we doing? We are changing his ancient style, right? That he'll change for once his ancient style. That's what the text reads. And we are really going away from that ancient style of smooth flowing counterpoint and dissonances treated really well, key changes occurring rarely, only when it's really, really warranted. Here we have this abject trip across the tonal spectrum, actually, all across the keys. Circle of keys in this very nice chromatic way. You have all these different accidentals and raised notes, lowered notes clashing against each other in this most beautiful effect to portray this really striking line that he'll change for once his ancient style by actually changing that really ancient style. I just love things like this going on in music. It's just so fun. But yeah, that's enough of me talking about it. Let's actually listen to that madrigal by Luca Marenzio. Yep, some really beautiful stuff there by Luca Marenzio. You could really hear those dissonances ringing in your ears, couldn't you? Some housekeeping now. You probably know I have this Instagram account, Atman_Midway, where I post regular updates about the show. Please give that a follow, just so you know what the next show is going to be about. I post generally 24 hours or so in advance details about the next episode, and just you can stay tuned to that. You can access recordings of all past shows by going to www.midwaveradio.com/show/from-my-dear-parnassus. By going to that site, you'll find general information about the show and all past recordings, Spotify playlists, etc. Another place you can find Spotify playlists is by going to my Instagram account, which I just mentioned, Atman_Midway, going to the bio, clicking to the link tree there, and there you'll have a nice list of all the episodes with links taking you to the Spotify playlist in case you want to listen to all this music by yourself, which I really think you ought to because it's beautiful music. I listen to it all the time, and it really is nice. Halftime shout out here. You're listening to the show From My Dear Parnassus on Midwave Radio, and I'm your host, Atman Vakil. Now, let's move on to the next composer for today, Lutsasko Lutsaski, 1545 to 1607, and as the name suggests, another Italian. Lutsaski was a pupil of Cipriano de Rore, the composer we talked about last episode, the one who really pushed on with dissonance and expression in madrigals. He worked at the Este court in this Italian city-state of Ferrara, which is somewhere in the northeast, I think. I think it's somewhere between Mantua and Venice, if I'm not wrong. Now, a really interesting feature of the Ferrara court is this thing called the Concerto delle Donne. Duke Alfonso, which translates as the ensemble of women, quite literally. So Duke Alfonso II of Ferrara started this ensemble of female singers sometime in, I think, the early 1580s, went on till the Duke died. This ensemble was quite a strange thing for many reasons. One, you have female singers. Now, this was very unorthodox back then. Most of the time, you'd have high-voiced roles being sung by boys whose voices hadn't broken, or castrati, which were essentially men who were castrated who got themselves castrated voluntarily to retain the high pitch of their voice. And it was said that the voice of a castrati was one of the most beautiful things ever, the voice of the castrati or one castrato. Another interesting feature of the Concerto delle Donne is that this ensemble of female singers was a private ensemble for the Duke and his close courtiers, and he'd often have little concerts in chambers with these ensemble, with the Concerto delle Donne. And the most interesting, though, is there's a lot of virtuosic singing involved. Lutsaski wrote for this ensemble. And what I mean by virtuosic singing is that music in the Renaissance had this really important feature where it was written out very simply with very few notes while the composer is composing. But much more was expected in performance. It was the job of the singer to really take what the composer had given him, most of the times, or her, and add in little diminutions of their own. And so by that I mean they were supposed to fill in extra notes dividing the given note values in smaller parts so that they could fit in more notes, add embellishments, ornaments. There were often very fixed formulas that, okay, in this situation, this is something which would be stylistically very appropriate. Towards a cadence, this is what is typically done. There were many treatises written by masters and theorists about how you can approach the art of diminution, but there was a lot of flexibility left at the hands or at the throat of the individual singer. They could really have their fun with it. And that was considered the mark of a good singer, not just being able to sing given notes nicely or accurately, but being able to really improvise beautiful diminutions. And these diminutions too were of different styles. Either one, if it was a choral piece, either four voices or four or five voices, one voice was supposed to do the diminutions in their melody. Not all the time though. That's another important thing. You don't do diminutions all the time because you can't really have that going on all the time. One, it exhausts the singer, and two, it doesn't really sound fun if it's going on all the time. You should be reserved for specific occasions. So yeah, so you have one voice doing the diminutions while the others just sing what is given. Or you have diminutions being transferred across voices. If it's a solo piece accompanied by a clavicembalo or a harpsichord or a lute, the singer was supposed to add diminutions. Even instrumentalists were supposed to add diminutions. Whether they were viol players or wind instrument players. Yeah, that was the mark of a good instrumentalist. Adding stylistically appropriate diminutions. And as I said, these weren't very often written out. I'll give you one example, and I'm going to be very bold and try to sing these out myself on air. Probably going to regret this sooner than I think. But there's this piece by Monteverdi, which we will get to eventually, in which he identifies one stanza in the text and says that here the singer is really supposed to have their fun with diminutions. Here I go. I'm going to sing the original, just a few lines, and then add diminutions to it. Yes, the original.
Notte che nel profondo scuro seno chiudeste.
And here is it with a few diminutions.
Notte che nel profondo scuro seno chiudeste.
And yeah, that is just a small sample of what you could do with diminutions. And those weren't written out. I added those myself in the diminutions. One very, very, very remarkable feature in this one piece by Luzzasco Luzzaschi is that he actually spelled out his diminutions for the singer. This piece, this collection is called the Madrigali per Cantare e Sonare. Madrigals for singing and sounding. And he actually writes out his diminutions. This is a collection written for the Concerto delle Donne, the little ensemble of women, for one, two, or three sopranos, depends on the piece, accompanied by a keyboard. And again, it's very unusual, but we have the keyboard part written out in full as well. And this gives us tremendous insight into how continuo players were supposed to evaluate the baseline into a proper keyboard or lute format, and how singers were really supposed to carry out their diminutions, right? Because these wouldn't be written out. All we have is vague hints from treatises and textbooks. But actually having pieces with diminutions written out, oh wow, that's really useful. Let's listen to a couple of pieces from this collection, the Madrigali per cantare e sonare, and it's going to be interesting to see those diminutions in full force. So when the singer is really jumping up and down virtuosically, those are the diminutions, and this time not improvised by the singer but spelt out by the composer himself. Here we go. That was a madrigal for one voice with accompaniment Aura Soave from Luzzasco Luzzaschi's Madrigali per Cantare e Sonare. Those diminutions, those really virtuosic bursts by the soprano added a lot to the piece. I've added another piece from the same collection to the playlist, which you can access from my Instagram account, Atman_Midwave. I'm going to the link in the bio. But unfortunately, now we must move on because I really want to do enough justice to our last composer, Carlo Gesualdo, the Prince of Venosa. lived 1566 to 1613, and he was nasty. Yeah, he wasn't the best human being. He caught his wife and her lover doing something they weren't supposed to do. And he just killed them on the spot. Just brutally murdered them on the spot. And that has really given us a wonderful characterization of the man himself, giving us lots of insights into the music he composed. Now, speaking of which, his music was very, very, very expressive, loaded with chromaticism. No other composer, not even Claudio Monteverdi, used chromaticism to the extent Gesualdo did. And yeah, dissonance of the type you find in Gesualdo's music is not seen again till the 19th century. 300 years later, this man was really creative in the way he picked up different uses of dissonance and chromaticism in his music. We have time to listen to two madrigals by him. We'll try to fit in a third, but I don't think we'll be able to. Here we have Luci Serene e Chiare from his fourth book of madrigals. I'll read out the translation. Eyes serene and clear, you inflame me, but the heart finds pleasure, not sorrow, in the fire. Words sweet and dear, you wound me, but my breast finds pleasure, not sorrow, in the wound. O miracle of love, the soul that is all fire and blood destroys itself, grieves not, dies without languishing. You'll see a really nice contrast in the first two stanzas, in the first and second line. Eyes serene and clear will be a nice, soothing, soft opening. Then we burst into action with you inflame me, but the heart finds pleasure, quiet, not sorrow in the fire. Again, speeding up. Same for the second stanza. And the last stanza, particularly the last line, the soul struggles, grieves not, dies without languishing. It's just so nice and chromatic and draws the piece out to its conclusion. Let's listen to this piece by Carlo Gesualdo. beautiful piece and beautiful recording by Carlo Gesualdo. Though this is not nearly as chromatic as his music goes. One of the best examples of chromaticism in his music is from his sixth book of madrigals, Moro lasso al mio duolo. I die, alas, in my suffering. Translation. I die, alas, in my suffering, and she who could give me life, alas, kills me and will not help me. O sorrowful fate, she who could give me life, alas, gives me death. The music is going to be utterly beautiful. We're going to listen to it right now. Just keep your ears tuned for the dissonances, especially in the words moro lasso, I die alas, where it just goes in this nice chromatic descent. Moro lasso, or something like that. Yeah, let's listen to the piece.
Thank you.
That was so dark, so rich, so powerful. Just, it does something to you, doesn't it? Especially that last line, I, me, da morte. Alas, gives me death. Yeah, I wish we had time for one more madrigal by Carlo Gesualdo, but we don't. But it is in the Spotify playlist, and you know where to access it. Yeah, this madrigal, just, it's, especially his later books of madrigals, because that was after he killed his wife, they just have an extra touch of darkness to them, an extra bit of grief, sorrow, longing for peace, which is just not fulfilled. There's been a lot of research on Gesualdo, both as a person and as a music composer. And there's always this one question which begs for an answer. Do we listen to his music because he killed his wife? Is his music famous because he killed his wife? Or are his misdeeds as a human all the more relevant because he was a great composer? I can't remember who it was that brought up this question, but it is a striking question. And the more Gesualdo I listen to, the more I feel this way. There's even a bunch of sacred pieces by him which really give us an insight to his heart and his mind and what the man was going through, filled with regret at what he had done. But yes, we end our show here today. Next week, stay tuned. I'm going to make the announcement on my Instagram account. Either we cross into the realm of Claudio Monteverdi, or we take a quick trip across the channel to England to see the madrigal scene there. More on that later. But hope you enjoyed the show. This is Atman Vakil signing off for his show from My Dear Parnassus on midwaveradio.com. Thanks and have a good week. Bye.